Hello, today Michael Morpurgo, the children's author and laureate, whose book War Horse became an international phenomenon on stage, now on screen, talks about its origins and why they matter now, and a wonderful new exhibition. Des Bishop, stand-up comedian on the show that grew out of a father's life and death, and Stanley Jackson spills, we hope, some mercantile truths on the modern celebrity booking industry. But as we're going to start with Gloria Elliott, Chief Executive of the Noise Abatement Society, I want to ask everybody what the most irritating, intrusive and miserable noise is that they hate and can't work with.
Stanley Jackson, her least favourite noise?
Well, I know, not a favourite noise, because I have a unique ability to cut out noise completely. And this is because when we were kids, we were the neighbours from hell. We made so much noise in our household that in the end we had to be moved, the whole family. And so I've developed this technique over the years, especially when I was doing my O-levels at school, cutting all noise out, and it drives my wife up the wall at times, I have to say.
Well, so even her, she's telling you something.
Well, I don't appear to be listening, but I really am. But I don't let it worry me, so I'm very, very sorry, Gloria. I can't give you a noise that really drives me up the
wall. You're very fortunate.
So, tribute. It's interesting about fathers, because I've actually got two people here who've had slightly similar experiences of who they thought was their father not being their father, because that happened to you, Stanley, didn't
yes,
it?
Yes, it did. There were so many parallels there with my own experience from a completely different perspective. My mother was a manic depressive, and with all that goes with that, it's all known as bipolar these days, of course, which is why I mentioned earlier on about the noisy... We were the family from hell. Mm. We made a lot of noise, and it was difficult. But she was in that state, and she once told me, and something you said about your relative, she once told me that my father was a Canadian soldier. And you can never tell, you know, whether you're someone in that condition is really telling you the truth. And it was only a couple of years ago, when I did a DNA test with my brother, that I discovered it was true. That
different fathers.
I don't know about the Canadian soldier aspect of it, but it makes you reassess where your roots are. Yeah. Well, this is
Stanley
absolutely
Jackson,
yes.
I mean, grandfather,
this is absolutely amazing. Your producer said Michael was on the program, I couldn't believe it, because in researching my family background through my mother's route, my grandfather, who was very close to me, fought in the First World War. And he was, and I brought the certificate in to show you, as you know. He was a member of the ASC Remounts. He did 9 months there from January 1917. And he used to tell me stories. He was the sort of character who wouldn't talk about the war unless you really, rather like the man you've just been describing. Yeah. He was a very modest man. But he shipped horses over. And when I was doing my research, he was down at Swathling in near Stoneham in Hampshire. And that particular unit there dealt with nearly 400,000 horses that they shipped over during the course of the war. 300,000 of them, this will interest Des, were bought in America. So they came from America first. Well, it's extraordinary. When I looked at my grandfather's record, he was 9 months with the horses. And then there's a scrawled note on the papers that says, compulsorily transferred due to the exigencies of war. Mm. And then he quotes the paragraph number, and he was then sent out to the front, shot, brought back, patched up, sent back again and shot again. Mm. And when I went out to see in Richebourg where he had fought, there is a book that people can put their names in when they go to visit. And there was an entry there of someone, you know, clearly who had a relative of somebody who had actually died, and it gave the address. And I felt almost guilty that I was there just to see where my grandfather had survived. And I had an immediate urgency to write to this person and say, yeah, you know, your relative actually died, you know, to help me. And it really brings it home to you when you see a single individual. And your production, I have to say, Michael, is unbelievable.
It was to understand Jackson and his book and trade, very different. The book is called Get Me a Celebrity, Memoirs of a Celebrity Booker. And Stanley tells in it very amusing story of how he himself changed direction early, was going to be a prime minister one day, once heckled Enoch Powell, worked in finance, explained pensions to people. And then you got into this business of booking and looking after dinner and conference speakers. You started with sportsmen, didn't you?
Yes, I did. And I think for the benefit of listeners who think celebrity is a glamorous place to be, I mean, we take celebrities who've made their name, as you say, in sport or in television or on even in books, and we put them in front of a live audience in what we call the corporate market. Now, the corporate market can mean lots and lots of things, and we've grown the business over the years so that some of our clients are the United Nations, for example, at one end, and you might have a sports club in Warrington at the other end, and everything in between. But the point is, and it comes back to performance that Des was talking about, celebrities have made their name in a certain environment, and a stand-up comedian or a comedian that knows
know what to do when they get there. But if you're a footballer, or indeed somebody off reality television, presumably you have to make a judgment. Is this just someone to open supermarkets quite quietly, or can we risk them after dinner?
It's better than that, because we need to advise the client what to expect when the celebrity turns up. And most of the work that we do is explaining to each party what to expect from the other, and that is where the role comes in.
Are there ever massive misunderstandings?
Oh yes, you get them occasionally, obviously, but it's the briefing stage that causes most of the hilarity, shall we say. I mean, if you have Ruby Wax ringing you up, for example, and she comes on and says something like, "Hi Stanley, Ruby here, tell me all about cricket, Stanley." Now, I've got 3 minutes to explain to an American the rules of cricket, which involve Chinamen and Googlies, and knowing, of course, that she's got two other conversations going on at the other end of the telephone, and I've got colleagues whispering in my ear to be helpful.
Presumably you're also having to say to the corporate market, just be a little bit careful around Fred X, because he's hypersensitive.
Yes.
Don't make jokes about him.
Yes, you won't drag names out of me, Libby, because I want the book to be read, and the only way they can find out if they're in there is to buy a copy. So,
do you explain cricket in 3 minutes? I'd be delighted to.
No, not now. Don't even stop. But the fascinating aspect of the book is this sort of portrait of the corporate market, which has hugely grown. And it's become a sort of bastard child of the variety circuit, really, hasn't it? People are operating in almost the same way.
Yes, it is. It's a source of considerable income for people who are in entertainment. I mean, Joe Brand, who very kindly attended a little function of mine a couple of weeks ago, she explains that it is to some stand-up comedians they won't go near it, but Joe enjoys it. It's a challenge for her, you know. And so I have to explain to her, you know, that you mustn't use the C word, for example.
And the National Inaugurated Valve Manufacturers Federation Ladies Night Dinner.
Exactly. And the problem is that the president of an organisation like that will say to me, "We must have Joe Brand. We must have Joe Brand. Get me Joe Brand. Get me a celebrity. Get me Joe Brand." And so, of course, You do, and you're waiting for Joe. You're you know, she's about to arrive, and the chairman says, "She won't swear, will she?" And I say, "Well, look, you've hired Joe Brand, not Mother Teresa." And then you have about a 2 minute gap to explain to Joe, you know, "Joe, is it possible to sort of moderate a touch?" So over the years, of course, I'm known as the man who won't let her use the C word.
There's a fascinating analysis of the what you might call the zombie celebrity, the virtually dead career, people who were on television for years and years and years, years ago, and yet they can still get enormous fees for doing their standard speech because people know who they are, well, even though actually they haven't been on the box or actually doing anything beyond after dinner for 20 years.
Well, that's right. I think it goes back to the heyday of television and BBC in particular, and ITV, of course, when they had really, really big audiences. And people are do remember faces from those days because the audiences were so large. And at the end of the day, if somebody is hiring a celebrity, they want to either impress or they want to sell tickets or they want to get people to come and watch these people. And if they don't know who they are, it's very difficult for them. But I must just put one small bit in, if I may, Libby. By a celebrity, I mean somebody with talent. You know, who
there's
actually
masses of celebrities who are celebrities because they're celebrities.
No, that's not a celebrity in my view. A celebrity means celebrating talent and making being moved by them because they've got talent. To be famous isn't the same as being a celebrity, and I wish we could find another word.
But they do get the gigs.
They don't last, though, Libby. I promise you, they don't.